You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Hope you all had a very blessed and enjoyable and safe long Labor Day weekend. It is officially the first day of school for many young folks across the city of Milwaukee. We're going to talk more about that in just a minute. I've also got a few special guests that are quite timely with some of today's breaking news and news of the nation over the past week. Can't wait to bring them to each and every one of you. But some breaking news, of course, to start this afternoon. Just moments ago, a federal judge ordered that Google must hand over its search results and other data to rival companies, but will not need to break itself up into multiple parts. This from a ruling, again, a federal judge late this afternoon. This was a landmark antitrust case that has been much watched by all sorts of folks, including folks in the AI space. This is about big data, who gets it, who gets to do what with it, and whether or not that creates unfair competitive advantages in the marketplaces for these, quote, big data companies. Judge Amit P. Mehta of the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia said in a ruling that to resolve Google's monopoly in search, the company must share some of its search data with companies that are, quote, qualified competitors, end quote. The Justice Department had asked the judge to force the company to share even more of its data, arguing that this was key to Google's dominance. So again, maybe a partial win for the Justice Department, Google avoiding, again, a massive breakup, as well as a requirement to share more of its data. We'll see if appeals ensue from that ruling, but absolutely monumental when it comes to competition in the marketplace. Certainly, as I've argued before on this program, Donald Trump is no capitalist. He doesn't believe in free markets. He believes in control of all business by one person. That is Donald Trump. That's why I call him, you know, a fascist. Continuing with other news this afternoon, a federal judge in California has barred soldiers from aiding in immigration arrests and other civilian law enforcement in Southern California today, warning of a growing, quote, national police force with the president as its chief in a blistering opinion set to take effect on September 12th. This was a 52-page decision, and it bars the administration from, quote, deploying, ordering, instructing, training, or using, end quote, California troops to engage in civilian law enforcement. This ruling could have wide-reaching consequences. Donald Trump is moving Space Force from Colorado to Alabama, I guess, mostly, I don't know, to just thumb his nose at President Biden. I wonder how much this is going to cost. You set up the new Space Force, and then you decide, no, it shouldn't be in Colorado. We'll move it somewhere. It baffles the mind. Talk about fraud, waste, and abuse.
Priorities.
Oh, my goodness, folks. That is the voice of my next guest, one of my favorite guests. She's with me on many Tuesdays, every other Tuesday, if you're a close watcher of this fine program. Her name is Angela Lang. She's the executive director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities here in Milwaukee. And Angela, I wanted to begin with a bit of the news of the day. And we've talked about this issue before. There are two additional pieces to what I'm going to call Donald Trump sicking the military on civilians, on our families in the United States. Again, legal scholars will have the technical arguments about the Posse Comitatus Act, about the specific statutes that govern D.C. law enforcement. But we also had, of course, the president today proclaiming, though this is a lie, that there is now, quote, no crime in Washington, D.C. Gee whiz.
Wow.
That was like magic wand type stuff. Again, that's a lie. There's not zero crime in Washington, D.C. That's an impossibility. And he basically promised a crackdown in Chicago, saying, quote, we're going in. He didn't offer any details on timing. But he said, we're doing it. We're going to do it anyways. We have the right to do it. I wish the governor of Illinois would call me up. I would love to do it. I mean, crazy. He went on to say, we have an obligation to protect this country, and that includes Baltimore. I don't debate with the president that he and our federal government has a right to protect this country, but the military deals with war. They're, quote, war fighters. Remember Pete Hegseth talking about that? If they're such war fighters, that has nothing to do. They're completely different skill sets from civilian law enforcement. And then this bit of news just within the last hour and a half, Angela. D.C. Mayor, maybe I can say the words today. D.C.'s mayor, Muriel Bowser, issued an executive order on today, that welcomed federal law enforcement officials to stay in Washington, D.C. indefinitely. The order goes on to require local coordination with federal law enforcement, quote, to the maximum extent allowable by law within the district, and the order has no expiration date. This is now sitting at odds, Angela, with the federalization of the D.C. police force, which lasts only 30 days and is set to expire next week, which would require extension by Congress. Legal scholars are not sure what to make of all this. We have a little bit of sound from what I would call other capitulation by Mayor Bowser from last week. Let's take a listen.
We greatly appreciate the surge of officers that enhance what MPD has been able to do in this city. The most significant thing that we are highlighting today is the area of crime that was most troubling for us in 2023. Now, we have driven it down over the last years, but I'm going to get my glasses so I can make sure I can see it correctly.
Okay, well, while she gets her glasses last week, we can wrap that clip. It goes on, more of this. I just find this, it's complicated, right? And I can see, Angela, let me be a devil's advocate here for a moment. If I had faith that this was not political stunt and it was actually about public safety, and I know how challenging it is for many local police departments with budgets and staffing. I've heard from friends of mine that are police officers that used to walk in neighborhoods and now they sit alone in squad cars, that help, good faith help, is not actually unwelcomed in many places. But the catch there is good faith help. And I would also say this, it's also to me about violence prevention and not just putting down and ticketing more prolifically nuisance crimes, these kinds of things. Listen, community policing is a thing. We can have debates about some of the elements of that. But I just want to take as a devil's advocate's position, hey, listen, if this was actually in good faith, it was being accompanied by greater investments in mental health, diversion programs, treatment programs, work programs to make sure that when people get out of an incarceration situation, that they have a pathway to move forward and not offend again. So taking that, just like if it were only that, I can understand a mayor of a large city who's been struggling to make budget works. But Angela, just your reactions to all of this, this is not good faith. This is not actually about public safety. So I am utterly perplexed by Mayor Bowser's position and apparent complete capitulation. Now, D.C. on different legal grounds than L.A., Chicago, Baltimore.
Sure.
Or even Milwaukee. But your thoughts on this, Angela. Thanks for your patience as we set this up. A lot happening today.
No, it's important to connect these dots too. And that's exactly what I was writing down. If this was in good faith, Trump wouldn't be cutting preventative programs. He wouldn't be cutting all of these different social services and these wraparound programs that actually support folks. If we are serious, and I've said this for years, if we are serious about tackling crime, we have to look at the root cause. I don't believe anybody wakes up and is like, I'm bored today. I'm going to go play around and be Scarface, right?
Yeah.
And I had this conversation recently with some team members who, you know, did some stuff in their past. And there's a Tupac line that said, I never did a crime I didn't have to do. Right. Mm-hmm. And there's so many times that people, out of survival, out of a scarcity mentality, do things. I'm not advocating for crime. Let me be clear. Right. But like, you can kind of understand that when you are cutting services and people are trying to survive and you see challenges in your community, and then you go to places like Shorewood or Whitefish Bay and they're over there thriving, then let's have a real conversation about tackling crime. And so we've seen, you know, with the Doge cuts and all of these things that predominantly affects a lot of Black women, how that trickles into the household, into the Black communities. And so I don't think, you know, I agree with you, it is not in good faith at all. And speaking of the crime in DC, you know, I was on with Greg last week and I said this then, is like, yeah, I agree. There's a lot of crime in DC right now because of the Trump administration. It is in the White House. The call is coming from inside the house, right? And I've seen clips of National Guard folks standing around or picking up trash, right? And so it feels like a political play. It feels like another way to kind of have this like us versus them mentality. And I think there's a lot of tension and folks are on edge, especially with comments about Chicago. And I've said for a while, I'm very concerned about Chicago. Chicago is not far from Milwaukee, which also has a Black mayor, who is a Democrat, right? And I think it's, I want to name this, I think people are seeing the dots, but I want to say it explicitly, is that these are cities with large Black populations, Black and brown populations. We're not seeing, you know, takeovers of, you know, some of these other states, right?
Yeah, 13 of the 20 cities with the highest murder rates, as Governor J.B. Pritzker has repeatedly pointed out, have higher per capita murder rates, homicide rates, violent crime rates than these cities that Donald Trump is targeting. This is about creating a narrative that tries to convince his base that there are bad people who don't care about public safety.
Yep.
And what it is really about is that is what the objective is. It's to give, it is to pit regular Americans against one another. Mm-hmm. It is to feed this idea that we all don't want, demand, and deserve both freedom and safety, sometimes at odds, sometimes difficult to deliver, that we all want opportunities. And the underlying current of targeting Black and brown people, Black mayors, all of that is pointing to this has nothing to do with public safety. This is about false division and, frankly, creating an opportunity now and, oh, yeah, in the future, maybe, I don't know, during an election cycle to oppress. This is about oppression. It has nothing to do with safety.
Right.
Those that buy the Trump line, he's selling you a bill of goods, the con man extraordinaire. We continue this discussion with Back to School and what's going on with lead in our MPS schools with Angela Block, Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. Stay tuned. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined this half hour by Angela Lang, Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. We were talking about Donald Trump and the federalization of police forces. He's going to send troops to Chicago. There's a decision out of Southern California today saying he's violating the Posse Comitatus Act. You can't use federal military for civilian law enforcement. You cannot use federal military for federal immigration enforcement. There are rules, believe it or not. And I got a great text from Mark from Sussex, one of our conservative listeners and callers. He's saying this, listen, if there are problems with public safety because of Donald Trump's cuts to programs that are about intervention, again, rehabilitation programs, drug treat, all these different elements that we're talking about that help with violence prevention, then we would have had, then these cities would have been perfectly safe before Donald Trump. And he says, what a load of crap. And I just wanted to respond to Mark, Angela, and give you an opportunity as well. First of all, that is literally creating a straw man argument. Neither I nor Angela have ever said we have perfection in large urban environments. There's not a city, a large urban environment, not as, with this many guns, by the way, in the world that has a zero crime rate. And I'm talking about even in places with very oppressive totalitarian regimes. It just doesn't exist. So what you're talking about is what are the circumstances that will actually lead to lasting, true public safety improvements? Because no one, again, the red herring here, the straw man is that, oh, Democrats want what? Like crime-ridden streets? That's just stupid. He's selling you rhetoric. Everyone deserves and demands, right, safety and freedom, right, and good opportunities. And the question is what actually works to get there. This is not the way to get to long-term public safety. Your thoughts on Mark's comments?
Yeah, thanks, Mark, because it gives me a chance to even explain and connect the dots even more. I think previously the words I even used was I've been saying this for years, right? Implying that we've been talking and having this conversation for years. And I've been ED of Block since 2017 and have been doing this work for a lot longer than that. And so you can pull my record. I've said that this has been a problem and that we need to actually invest in our communities and not spend, at least in the city of Milwaukee, almost half of the city budget to law enforcement. And that if we want to actually get to the root causes of crime, we should talk about investing into our communities with various services. That is something I specifically have said for 7+ years, specifically at Block and other roles. And adding on a plus one, what you said, Maggie, is we've never said that crime was zero at all. But what we are saying is that watch how things are going to get worse when people continue to struggle, when they can't make ends meet, when they lose their affordable housing, when they lose access to childcare or mental health services. We are going to see things get worse. We're not saying that things were perfect beforehand, but we're going to see the lasting effects of these current policies. So thanks, Mark, for allowing me to break that down a little more.
I'm always happy for those texts and comments. And Mark, what Mark is specifically focusing on a phrase, because of Trump's cuts. What Angela and I were attributing to because of Trump's cuts was that you know that this has nothing to do with public safety because right. of Trump's cuts to all of these things that actually help create lasting increases in public safety in all neighborhoods. And that's the hypocrisy. That's how you know it's a lie. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Charles from Milwaukee on the line. Charles, go ahead.
Hey, Maggie and Angela. Three quick points. If he was worried about crime, he'd walk down the street and turn himself in first because he's a crook. He's a criminal. Second, if he was worried about crime, he'd go to the red states and take care of crime there. That's the worst. And third, if he was worried about crime, that's why I get tired of people like Mark and CJ with their comments about Trump is the best. He wouldn't have pardoned all of those people that broke into the Capitol and was out to kill Mike Pence and Nancy Pelosi. Some of those people committed serious crimes. One of them was one of the biggest fentanyl dealers around. And he's walking the streets now.
Yeah. So thanks so much, Charles. We got CJ on the line. CJ, what do you say to Charles? If Donald Trump was all about public safety, why is it okay to beat cops on January 6th, but not okay today in the streets of Washington, D.C.?
Well, I think the numbers speak for themselves.
Hang on. The numbers on crime show slow improvement, not enough. But my question was really specific. If Donald Trump was serious about crime, then why was it okay for him to pardon people who beat police officers? And that's okay on a date that happened to be January 6th, when it was people that supported him, but someone that beats a cop now, he wants the death penalty for? Make that make sense, Mark. Excuse me, CJ. Pardon me, sir.
You call me sir as you shut my mic off every time I try to answer the way you want me to answer. Well, the numbers for the mayor from D.C. show that it worked and puts her, you know, only 54 people were shot this weekend. He's doing a great job. I love hearing
CJ,
you.
CJ, I really, sir, I would really ask you to understand that when I call you, sir, and treat you with respect, it's because I want us to deal with the inconsistencies. Angela and I have both said, excuse me. Angela and I have both said in this segment that we have work to do on crime. And I'm asking you, sir, to address your best president in history's hypocrisy. You refuse to do so. And I think that, sir, reveals a great amount about the hypocrisy that plagues all of MAGA and your logic itself. I can admit where we need improvements. Why can't you, CJ? I welcome you back tomorrow. Folks, I got to say goodbye to Angela because we've got the lady that did the big upset in Iowa. We are joined by Caitlin Dre. Don't go anywhere. There is light at the end of this dark tunnel. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My thanks to Angela Lang from Black Leaders Organizing Communities who joined me, as well as my friend CJ, conservative caller on the phone. We've been talking about, you know, it occurs to me, and I appreciate CJ's willingness to call and engage with me on the phones here. Even though I'm trying to focus in on these particular points that I think a lot of conservatives get really uncomfortable talking about. And I want to say at the same time, I think a lot of Democrats are really uncomfortable talking about some of the complexities of public safety. We were talking, if you're just joining us, about Donald Trump's statements today that they are definitely going to Chicago. There was a federal court ruling that the use of federal military for civilian law enforcement in L.A. violated the Posse Comitatus Act. There's a lot of action in this space at the moment. And the place that I wish we could all get to is an understanding that, yes, you need police, and we need sufficiently staffed police forces, but police... is, and whether that's a military presence, which again, military people, those are war fighters. They are not properly trained for civilian law enforcement purposes. But can't we have a discussion where we can actually talk about public safety challenges and what really truly works to build lasting safety in all of our communities? Because we all deserve that. And not resort to the kind of, I think, dialogue that I hear a lot from the right, which is Donald Trump is God, everything he does is just fine, and a refusal to deal with the two-facedness of much of the Trump administration's policies when it comes to public safety. Do not tell me that Donald Trump is a great crime fighter when he pardons cop beaters. That's not a consistent position. And the only way that you can make that make any sense is when you simply understand that what Donald Trump is doing is by creating false divisions in our communities, specifically targeting Black and Brown communities, and he's doing that to target communities that oppose much of his agenda, that it is literally about politics and not about public safety. So my thanks to everyone for engaging in what I think needs to be a much more dialed back and tuned in conversation about very, very real results. And that needs Democrats to sometimes change their language, their message, and their thinking about how to build bridges. Well, speaking of one of those bridge builders and change agents on both messaging and substance, I am so delighted, quite excited, to be joined by State Senator-elect from Iowa's fighting 12th District, excuse me, First District, Caitlin...
Number one,
the first State Senate District. Caitlin Dre, you just won an absolutely landmark election. This represents a basically 20-plus point swing from the November 2024 election where your state Senate district went about 10 points for Donald Trump. You swung that. You won your election just a week ago. Was it just a week ago? I lose track.
A week ago
of
today.
Oh,
yes.
My. Well, it's congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. So it's been a wild week.
Yeah, so you're a plus 20 swing. How did you do it? What was different about the message that you think made a difference to voters in Iowa's first state Senate district?
You know, I think I had the unique opportunity of being like an extremely online candidate. I spent a lot of time on Instagram, as detrimental as that is to our mental health, right? But I talked to voters instead of at them. And I think that made the biggest difference, truly. We spent a lot of time just talking about how to make a good life in the state of Iowa. And that's gotten more expensive, whether it's housing, healthcare, or childcare. And all three of those things are necessary to have a good life no matter where you live. So I think that message translates, you know, into a more national conversation. But really the takeaway, and if you want to call it a blueprint, it has to be speaking to voters and not at them.
Mm-hmm. It's so critical. And I think just laser focus on the issues that really impact
yes.
everybody's day-to-day lives. And it is fun for someone who does the job that I do on the radio to have political arguments about this rhetoric
yeah.
and that rhetoric. But at the end of the day, when I talk to friends that are trying to raise kids or younger people that I know that are trying to buy a home for the first time,
yep.
And folks that are just trying to make it work, that's the obstacle. The overwhelming sense that I get for people is, pardon the use of the term twice, how overwhelmed they feel and how unseen they feel. And when I spent a bunch of time like looking at your campaign website, Senator-elect, mm-hmm. and some of your social media feeds, and it was markedly different. It looked different than a politician's mm-hmm. website. You sounded different. And I was like, oh, God bless this woman and her team. I encourage everybody to go check it out. Kate, first of all, and we'll put all of your social handles and your website
you.
From your campaign in our show notes for today. But I think, again, it's not just about talking about the things that make people feel overwhelmed. It's how you talk to people. Tell me a little mm-hmm. bit, and we hear this all the time, don't talk at people, but with them. Tell
right?
me what
yeah.
that actually feels like and how you did that. Big online presence, but how did you do that when you were just in the retail politics of Iowa's first Senate district?
Well, I think what, like I said, being online, that's the first thing.
Yes.
But I kept saying over and over again, like, I'm just a regular lady. Just
yeah.
a regular person running for office, which is a feat, right? It's extremely
difficult
as a young parent, right? I have, she'll be 5 on Friday, and my husband and I both work full time. This process is not designed to help people like me succeed at running for office. But one of the things that I really, really pushed on, even when we were developing the messaging, was this sounds like every other political ad I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't work, right? That's not working to turn out Democratic voters right now, to turn out
any
people
voter.
To vote for. Exactly, right? Yeah, I'm like, to turn out any voter. But when you talk about removing the label of R and D, and I've said this before, Democratic policies are winners. People want to be able to afford a home. They want the wealthy to pay their fair share in taxes. They want to have access to healthcare that is based in science, that their doctor is not being interfered by some random politician who they've never met, right? And I just, we have to get back to using regular words, speaking yeah. to people, right? It's like this, we like message test and try and like perfect things, and voters can see through that. And to say like, oh, voters this, voters that, we're all people. We're just people like trying to build a good and beautiful life. And at the end of the day, we all pretty much agree on what it takes to do that. It's just like, how do we connect the dots to get from, you know, the horseshoe, right? How yes. do we get from all the way up here on the horseshoe? Most people are down here at the bottom.
Yes.
How do dots and conversation get out of this like yuck bin nastiness that we're in right now?
I also think some of it, you know, in reading up on your race and your election, what occurred to me is not only do you sound unpolitician, you feel not like a politician. And I mean that getting beyond the words, the people that I have seen be able to be highly effective in mixed districts or districts that seem to have big swings are people who feel genuine. When you're in a room with them or you're listening to them talk about things, it just feels real as opposed to, again, overly consulted and message managed candidates.
Yeah, I
also think that there is that this needs to be addressed. You know, one of the big pieces of news from just today is that Congressional Representative Jerry Nadler, who's been in Congress for 32 years, is not seeking re-election.
Can we just talk really quickly?
Go ahead, Caitlin, please.
I will be 38. That's the entirety of my life, right?
Yeah.
Insane. Like, what are we doing?
To your point, he said, this decision has not been easy, but I know in my heart it is the right one and that it is the right time to pass the torch to a new generation.
Yeah,
I think people are sick of voting for the same candidates over 35 years.
And so, like, that's the thing is, like, Congressman Nadler, what a beautiful legacy of work, right? That's so important to recognize. And there is something so beautiful in a leader that can say, I have done what I can at this point. I would love to see more of that, right? Like, there are a lot of people, and it's disproportionately, right? I don't have the facts and figures, but it's disproportionately on the Democratic side that we are under this gerontocracy, right? And there is, and this is, I think, part of why we have a hard time attracting younger people, even to that grassroots level, is because we say, oh, what can we do to turn out young voters? What can we do to engage young people? And then they show up and it's like, this is the way we've always done it. This is the way we're going to keep doing it. How does that widen the circle, encourage more people to show up? When it's like, no, you got to earn your stripes. When what we see on the right is just this consistent investment in, you know, outside money and outside kind of like the Joe Rogans and the Turning Point
they
USA's
pay attention
and
the to young voters. Yes. They do. They have specific. I mean, our former and governor runs one of those. Yeah. Go ahead, Caitlin.
But they give money to people and say do what you think resonates with your audience. And so now we're trying to play catch up in this way that's like, you know, how do we get there? And it's like, just let the young people do the young people thing. Like, it's not rocket science. We have to stop with this like meritocracy, gerontocracy, all of it.
And it'd be one thing if it was a meritocracy, like if we were closer to an actual meritocracy, right?
Yes,
which I
yes.
think is the thing that you're getting at.
Yeah.
What Congressman Nadler was perceiving, I think, is the need objectively on its own for younger candidates that can reflect, energize, communicate on the platforms, in the lingo, in a way that feels genuine for younger voters. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just say the thing that might get me in some hot water. Dear Democrats, in these seats that have held them for decades, take a look at your record. Take a really hard look in the mirror. If you have yet to accomplish what you set out to do as an elected official, maybe it is time for you to pass the baton to a new generation, as Representative Nadler said today. We're going to continue this fascinating discussion with Iowa State Senator-elect, a 20-point swing from November. I'm so pumped for her and the first Senate district in Iowa. Stay tuned, everybody. We're going to be right back. I'm Maggie Dawn. We continue to talk about how to build bridges and get that tent even bigger by energizing younger voters. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. I'm the host of this, the Maggie Dawn Show, here across the Civic Media Radio Network, now coming to you in three states, not quite yet to Iowa, but we've got a great guest from Iowa.
So close.
Her name is Caitlin Dre. She just won an absolutely upset, eyebrow-raising, framework-busting election in Iowa's State Senate District number one. We're talking about what Democrats haven't been getting, what the consultancy class hasn't gotten. Mm-hmm. During the break, you and I were talking about U.S. Senator Joni Ernst. Just let them eat cake or go ahead, get busy dying. Senator Ernst, she formally announced that her intention not to seek re-election. You had some reactions that fits exactly within what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, the video was just not great. She sounds so rehearsed and so robotic. I had another kind of colleague, grassroots volunteer. She sounds like AI. And it's just like, go stand near an open window and just talk to people like they are people. But she's very clearly reading from a teleprompter, which I, you know, like, you should have notes. You should have, you know, you should know what you want to say. That's fine. But it's just, it's robotic at best. And I think that's where we've lost people, right? Is just like, speak to people like they are people. We have to like get back to our neighbors. And we were talking during the break, it's like, I think, especially when you consider folks that have been doing this politician job for a lot of years, they've closed their ranks around themselves. They're surrounded by only their team who is in the echo chamber. They're so many degrees separated from voters that they've just forgotten how to speak to people. And I was trying to remember, because Senator Ernst has served two terms, so total of 12 years, right? Which was her campaign promise. She said she would only serve two terms. So I would offer some commendation on keeping a campaign promise, because that's, especially when you talk about tenure in that way, that's not something that happens. You know, you get in the Beltway punch, and it feels good to be close to power, and
especially
in
senators.
Power.
They
honestly
have this very exalted
around.
I wish our
look
senator,
at our other look at our other half. Chuck Grassley is 90 years old.
90.
He's older than the chocolate chip cookie. Did you know that?
Oh, Caitlin, I'm filing that one away. If you're
so bad,
if you're older than the chocolate chip cookie, maybe America needs a new cookie. You know what I'm saying? Oy.
Listen, I love an Oreo as well, right?
Yes.
But I
delightful.
Think what's so, I think, so it's like, I loved my grandparents when they were alive. My grandmother passed away when she was 90. Mm-hmm. I would not have wanted her making decisions about grand policy, and the same can be said for how I feel about Chuck Grassley. Like, I'm sure he is a lovely, delightful grandfather, but please retire.
Yeah, to put it in slightly different terms, we want people to bring their life's experiences to bear as elected mm-hmm. officials, right? So I don't want exclusively young people or middle-aged people but it's important to say, hey, if you've held these seats for three decades plus, and we have an overweight to folks that are older and wealthier mm-hmm. in many of our state houses and our U.S. Capitol, the
you
question
can't
has to
relate
be asked, who experiences are left out? Yes.
Well, and like, when you talk about the wealth inequality and the disparity between the working class and those people at the top, I think that age gap also speaks to why we are seeing so much policy that is geared towards benefiting the very, very wealthy, because that's the life experience that you know, boomers and above have. And so it's not really surprising in that regard. And it's just, it's frustrating because we have not seen that transfer of wealth, right? That's how boomers were successful. Their parents planned and bequeathed. And now there has just been this like stranglehold on money and property and power in the older generations, leaving people like me, younger people, and politics is one of the few places that I'm still considered young, but leading us to try and claw back or hang on to whatever we can find. That's why housing is expensive, because it's not as available, because we have people with, you know, multiple properties, and it's all these threads that, like, you start feeling a little bit like a conspiracy theorist, but it's all connected.
Well, and the idea at base, right? And I've heard this from many folks of a certain age, more of whom say these sorts of things tend to be more conservative. Well, I did this, mm-hmm. I worked hard, blah, blah, blah. And then I explained to them my life's experiences and explained to them what I've done in work or share some other experience. And I'm like, some of these people haven't yet been able to afford to purchase a home. And it is mystifying because 2 + 2 equaling 4 for that prior generation, many of whom worked their butts off, defended us in World War II. It's not translating. It's mm-hmm. 2 + 2 equals -1 now. And people are wondering why there's such disengagement and disillusionment.
Really quickly. I know, yes, we're getting please, the cue, but the biggest thing is the minimum wage has not kept pace. If it had, yes, minimum wage right now would be $28 per hour. And it's in Iowa, it's $7.25.
That is the here perfect illustration.
Yep. Yeah. That's all it is, right?
It's an insanity. We welcome Caitlin Dre to the show. Thank you so much for being here. Oh, Iowa's state senator elect for District 1, a game changer in her own right. We hope to see more of it, not just in Iowa and Wisconsin, but across the U.S. Stay tuned. We're going to talk vaccines and what you can do with the school year starting to keep your family and children safe. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.